It's 4 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Victor Beatty reporting U.S. lawmakers seeking leverage in the Iran nuclear talks. In a unanimous vote Tuesday, the U.S. Senate's Foreign Relations Committee approved a compromise measure to subject any final nuclear agreement with Iran to congressional review and a potential vote approving or rejecting it. Bob Corker is the committee chairman.
More fully than ever, I believe Congress should play a role in ensuring that all the details that need to be in place are there, and that on behalf of the American people, before the congressionally mandated sanctions are lifted, that we on their behalf ensure that this is something that holds Iran accountable, is enforceable, and certainly is very transparent.
The bill now goes to the full Senate and House. The White House indicated President Obama will likely sign it. It would cut the congressional review period of a deal with Iran from 60 to 30 days. The president would have to certify Tehran is living up to the terms of the agreement every 90 days. Sanctions put in place by Congress would be immediately reimposed if Iran violates the deal. Washington Post executive editor Martin Barron said Tuesday the newspaper's Iranian correspondent, jailed in Tehran on still unspecified charges, is being denied acceptable legal representation. Iranian authorities arrested the dual U.S.-Iranian citizen last July. In Guinea, the opposition has called for a one-week suspension of anti-government protests that broke out Monday, leaving at least one dead, several wounded. The protesters clashed with security forces, throwing stones, police responding with tear gas and warning shots. The opposition is angry over what it calls a broken agreement with the government for local elections to precede national ballot. The government of longtime President Alpha Conde called for national elections to be held October 11th. This is VOA News. The UN Security Council has approved an arms embargo on the leaders of Yemen's Shia Houthi rebels and demanded the group withdraw from the capital Sana'a and all other territory it's captured. The council vote was 14 to nothing, with Russia abstaining. Samantha Power is the U.S. UN ambassador.
The United States strongly supports the adoption of today's resolution, which imposes consequences on the Houthi and former President Saleh, demands that the Houthi cease military operations, and calls on all sides to once again return to the negotiating table.
Russia's ambassador said the resolution does not call for an end to airstrikes being carried out by a Saudi-led coalition against the rebels, who are battling against forces backing Yemen's internationally recognized President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi. President Obama is to meet Wednesday with his counterparts from the West African countries of Liberia, Guinea, and Sierra Leone to discuss progress on the response to the Ebola epidemic that has ravaged the region since March 2014, infecting more than 25,000, killing more than 10,000. In Sierra Leone Tuesday, students returned to schools after classes were suspended 8 months ago to stop the spread of the deadly virus. Haja Isatu Thomas is principal of the Murraytown Army Secondary School.
We know we are not totally free from Ebola, so we have that awareness. We are cautious about that. So we have this Veronica bucket displayed all around the school compound, and we encourage the students to wash their hands, the teachers to wash their hands. We've been giving thermometers to take their temperature, and we do that before they go into class. We have even conducted devotion this morning, reminding them, sensitizing them as to how they should behave in school and even outside school.
More than 8,000 schools were to reopen for some 1.8 million children. A Ukrainian military spokesman said 6 soldiers were killed in clashes Monday and Tuesday with Russian-backed rebels in eastern Ukraine. China Tuesday said its economy slowed to a 6-year low of 7% in the first quarter of the year, raising expectations of further government stimulus measures. U.S. soul singer Percy Sledge, whose smash 1966 record hit When a Man Loves a Woman became an anthem for heartbroken lovers everywhere, died Tuesday of liver cancer at age 74. Sledge, a hospital orderly when he began singing in local clubs in his native Alabama in the 1960s. He recorded When a Man Loves a Woman after a painful breakup with a girlfriend. I'm Victor Beatty, VOA News.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Voice of America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate, Washington. Today is Wednesday, April 15th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. It's been a year since Boko Haram abducted 276 schoolgirls in northern Nigeria.
When you don't see your child for 2 hours, you're not sure where they are, you panic. 365 days, it's killing. You can't sleep, you can't eat, you can never be yourself.
Rosalind Ala is one of the mothers of the abducted Chibok girls. Guinea's opposition suspends protest after 2 days of violent clashes with security forces. Sierra Leone authorities say Tuesday's back to school was a success. And the United Nations says Kenya's plan to forcibly repatriate refugees back to Somalia is a violation of international law.
UNHCR is nevertheless concerned that abruptly closing the Dadaab refugee camps and forcing them back to Somalia would have extreme humanitarian and practical consequences, and it would be in breach of Kenya's international obligations.
Karen DeGroosh is a spokesperson for the UNHCR. Human Rights Watch said there's widespread lawlessness and banditry in northern Mali, and an ambulance driver will describe the scene after Tuesday's Al-Shabaab attack in Somalia's capital, Mogadishu. Those stories plus Mark Omar Sports and our Listener of the Day are coming up on Daybreak Africa. It's been 1 year since Boko Haram militants kidnapped more than 200 schoolgirls from the village of Chibok in northeast Nigeria. As Chris Stein reports, protesters took to the streets of the capital Abuja to mark the anniversary.
365 days ago, militants from the Islamic extremist group Boko Haram swept into the government girls' school in the Borno state town of Chibok and made off with more than 200 schoolgirls in a mass kidnapping that sparked international outrage. Since then, the group managed to overrun most of Borno State, only to be pushed back in a multinational military offensive. The Nigerian military has recaptured town after town from the insurgents in the past months, but have yet to find any of the girls. The Bring Back Our Girls protest group has been rallying every day since the kidnapping at the Unity Fountain in Abuja. On the one-year anniversary, they staged a march from the fountain to the Ministry of Education to air their grievances about why the girls have not been rescued. Those in the march were schoolgirls themselves, meant to represent the kidnapped girls. Miriam Yakubu Akunye helped organize the rally. Her 8-year-old niece is also one of the marchers.
This is very sad. Sometimes when you think about this, it's like you have an out-of-body experience. We alive, children are alive, went to school, and this happened to them. They disappeared, and now it's 360 days.
Rosalind Ala's 5-year-old daughter has been counting the days since the girls are missing and was one of the marchers. For her, the Chibok kidnapping feels personal.
When you don't see your child for 2 hours, you're not sure where they are, you panic. 365 days, it's killing. You can't sleep, you can't eat. You can never be yourself.
I can't help feeling that it could have been me. Many other girls like me across the country are equally outraged and heartbroken.
Accompanied by the police, the marchers headed into the courtyard of the education ministry and read letters outlining their concerns to officials representing the minister, who was not there. Most of their letters wanted to know the same thing. Why has the government not brought the schoolgirls back yet? There was no such public memorial in the town of Chibok, says Ayuba Alamson, an elder in the town. Many people preferred to stay inside, deterred by the larger military presence in Chibok, which was captured briefly by Boko Haram last November. Many families still hold out hope of seeing their daughters again, he says.
They have been praying day and night that one day they will see this girl.
Not all the girls have parents to come home to, Alamson says. In the intervening year, some of the parents of the Chibok girls have died from hypertension, which he attributed to the stress caused by the kidnappings. Others have been killed by the same people who kidnapped their daughters, Boko Haram. Chris Stein for VOA News, Abuja.
Guinea's opposition has suspended protest until next Monday after 2 consecutive days of violent clashes with security forces. Opposition parties called the demonstrations to try pressure the government to hold local elections ahead of presidential vote scheduled for October 11 this year. The announcement to suspend protest comes after Prime Minister Mohamed Fofana reportedly said on Tuesday he has set up a committee to explore means for a dialogue with the opposition. Ousmane Diallo is a member of the executive committee of the Opposition Union of Democratic Forces Party. He says the suspension is necessary to give members time to reflect.
We decided to suspend our protest until next Monday because we need to allow activists to reorganize and political party to deal with victims caused by security forces. That situation, we are again faced with the brutality and the police and gendarmes in our country.
I did speak with a government minister who said that the demonstration you had was illegal, that you did not get permission to demonstrate.
The demonstration is not illegal because the legality, the law side, we need to inform the local authority. But actually, we haven't legal authority in our commune. We decide to not recognize his power.
According to one account, Prime Minister Fofana has said that he's going to make new proposals to the opposition to resume dialogue. Is that why you postponed the protest?
Yeah, we have July in 2030. We have a discussion, we have a dialogue with this government, but he does not respect his engagement. That's the whole problem. Right now, we need the action. We don't need the dialogue too. We need the action. We need to our city, the Commission of Election, stop his program. That's our condition to return on the table for negotiation.
One of your demands is that you want the Elections Commission to cancel the current election timetable. Why?
Because he's the member of a commission election is corrupted. He is not work with the legal situation. And our government don't need to organize the objective election.
The government official we spoke with the other day said that it's not right for you, the opposition, to say that the Electoral Commission is not legal because the Electoral Commission was elected by both the opposition and the government.
So the commission is legal, but he is not working legal because the member of this commission are corrupted and he not speak with the member of opposition.
Suppose the government does not cancel the elections. Are you likely to continue your protests?
Yeah, we continue. If he is not good to organize the local election, we continue our protest again because the law of our country have a calendar of election. We need to have a local election before.
Some people say that the opposition is doing all this because you are not ready to go for election.
No, that's not right. We are ready to go to election because we need to have a local election now. We don't need to have a presidential election.
Usman Diallo is a member of the Executive Committee of the Opposition Union of Democratic Forces Party of Guinea. He was speaking with me from the capital, Conakry. Schools throughout Sierra Leone reopened on Tuesday, more than 8 months after classes were suspended due to the Ebola outbreak. Brahima Toure, Public Relations Officer of the Sierra Leone Ministry of Education, says back to school was a success. He says the government has put in place Ebola prevention measures such as decontamination of schools, distribution of hygiene kits, as well as thermometers to all schools throughout the country.
Well, after so many speculations and so many concerns raised by parents as a result of the fact that we still have Ebola in this country, we were able to put modalities in place to make sure that the school environment is safe. And so when the kids actually came to the school environment, they were amazed and were very much happy to return back to school after being out of school over 9 months.
As you said, it's been so long since the students were in school. They were not in school because of Ebola. So what sort of hygienic measures did your ministry put in place to make sure that the kids do not catch Ebola?
We actually target three components. First, we target the decontamination or disinfection of all schools that were used as holding centers or treatment centers or quarantine centers. We were also able to distribute hygiene kits to all the schools across the country. Veronica buckets, like soap, like hand washing, detergent, all of that. And also we were able to make sure that water is available in all of the schools across the country. And then after that, we also made sure we had enough thermometers. We had about 55,000 thermometers for 9,000 schools that are existing in this country.
Mr. Toure, it's been almost more than, 8 months since the students were last in the classroom. How does your ministry hope to compensate for the loss of time in the classroom?
Well, when we had Ebola outbreak in May last year, as a ministry, we did not just sit there and decide to wait until Ebola is eradicated from this land. So what we did, through the support of the government and our development partners, we launched the radio and television teaching program. So we were actually teaching effectively. It's almost like bringing the classroom into the radio station and the television station. And so that compensated for the lost time. And so for now, post-Ebola, what we have done is we have actually compressed the school year. So we are running a 25-week term for now. And so what does that mean? It means all other extracurricular activities like sports, like Thanksgiving celebrations, like prize giving, and all of the other activities that usually eat up on the time, on the academic year, we have put all of those aside and say it's all going to be structured school tuition continuously throughout the remainder of the school year.
Our correspondent in Freetown reported this week that the government of Sierra Leone has barred pregnant girls from attending school. Is that true?
Well, yes. It came about as a result of a concern that was raised by the West African Examination Council, which was the examining body that usually conducts our public examinations here in this country. They wrote a letter as far back as 2010 to the Ministry of Education expressing serious concern about pregnant girls actually taking the examinations and failing. The minister at that time took this complaint to the Sierra Leone cabinet. And so there was a cabinet conclusion at the time that don't allow them in the classroom because it would demotivate those who are already there and are not pregnant.
Brahima Touré is public relations officer of the Sierra Leone Ministry of Education. You are speaking with me from the capital, Freetown. Today's Wednesday, April 15th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington, and please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time, 17 minutes past the hour. Human Rights Watch has condemned what it says is widespread lawlessness and banditry in northern Mali. According to a report released Tuesday, wide swaths of land in the region are devoured of state authority. This has allowed both Islamist groups and individual criminals to commit abuses with impunity. Corinne Dufka, the group's associate director for West Africa, tells Breakish Shryak, her organization is asking the government of Mali in the north to work with a United Nations forces in the country to better protect civilians.
The situation is really very precarious. And the research that we did looked at both the north, where lawless and banditry is rife and is really imperiling the lives of ordinary citizens there, as well as in central Mali, where since the beginning of the year, a new front seems to have opened up with an armed Islamist group comprised primarily of Hul or Fulani has been engaged in numerous attacks and been accompanied by violations against civilians as well as some abuses by the security forces.
Is this a case of banditry and just stealing to steal, or your report mentions a specific group that has Islamist goals?
Yes, we found that the banditry and abuses in the north are being committed by numerous different armed groups as well as individuals, bandits who may or may not be linked to the armed groups. We spoke with scores of traders and animal herders and merchants who describe an incredibly difficult situation where as soon as they leave Gao or other cities, they are hit time and time again by bandits who steal their goods.
Did you find that people were being targeted because of their ethnicity? You know, was it specifically Tuaregs being targeted, for instance, or was this just people being targeted for their goods?
Well, it's hard to say because the vast majority of merchants in those areas appear to be from the Songhai ethnic group, and then most of the herders that I spoke with were Hul or Bella. But people from all different ethnic groups are really being targeted by this.
Have there been any instances of abuse of power by the army themselves and security forces?
So, yes, we also documented a number of worrying incidents, including mistreatment and torture by the Malian security forces, notably against Poles or Fulani, who are alleged to be involved in supporting this new group in central Mali. I spoke with about 30 individuals who described some form of mistreatment, and about 18 of them who had been detained around Nampala had described quite serious mistreatment, including beating and being forced to drink urine, as well as being threatened with death.
Karim Dufkat is the West Africa Associate Director for Human Rights Watch. She was speaking to Ricky Schreier from Washington. The United Nations Refugee Agency says Kenya's plan to forcibly repatriate hundreds of thousands of Somalis from the Dadaab refugee camp would violate international law. The UNHCR is urging the Kenyan government to reconsider its decision to close Dadaab, the world's largest refugee complex, within the next 3 months. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from UNHCR headquarters in Geneva.
The government of Kenya announced its decision to close the Dadaab complex a few days ago, following the horrific attack by Somali militant group Al-Shabaab at Kenya's Garissa University College. The UN Refugee Agency says it is shocked and appalled by the attack, which killed 148 students, and understands the seriousness of the threats Kenya is facing. At the same time, the spokeswoman for the agency, Karen de Gruul, says Kenya has an obligation to ensure the security not only of its citizens, but also of other people living in the country, including refugees.
UNHCR is nevertheless concerned that abruptly closing the Dadaab refugee camps and forcing them back to Somalia would have extreme humanitarian and practical consequences, and it would be in breach of Kenya's international obligations. We are thus urging the Kenyan authorities to give the matter further consideration.
Dadaab is a sprawling complex composed of five camps in northeastern Kenya. It houses an estimated 350,000 refugees, mostly Somali women and children. Most of the refugees have been living there for years. Many have been born in the camp and have never been to Somalia. In December, the UNHCR participated in a pilot project to help Somalis voluntarily repatriate to one of three relatively safe areas of Somalia. De Gruul says the UNHCR is ready to help those who wish to return home voluntarily. She adds most of the country is too dangerous for large-scale returns to take place, particularly to south-central Somalia. She tells VOA it would be tough to force so many people to go back at this time.
It's also very difficult to imagine how such a thing could be organized in a way that it maintains the dignity and the safety of the refugees there. I think the main issue is the voluntariness of returns. As you mentioned, if these people were forced to return, it could be in breach of international law, and UNHCR would not facilitate such a move.
The Kenyan government has called this sprawling complex a nursery for Al-Shabaab. De Gruul says the UNHCR recognizes Kenya's security concerns and has been working with the authorities to step up law enforcement in the camp and surrounding areas to deter any terrorist incursions from across the border. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for Tuesday bombing and assault on a government complex in the capital Mogadishu. Security Ministry spokesman Mohamed Yusuf tells VOA Somali Service that 18 people were killed and at least 15 others wounded in the attack on the country's higher education ministry. A witness said militants set off a car bomb outside the ministry walls, allowing the attackers to storm the building and open fire. Among the first rescue teams to reach the scene was Dr. Abdul Kader Abdurrahman Eden, founder of the Mogadishu Ambulance Services.
Approximately it was 12:10 p.m. and we had a big explosion. Then someone called us and told us that there is an explosion in the Ministry of Education. We went there because we are already alert. So when we reached there, we have seen a lot of people dying and injuring in front of the ministry.
And what happened to the people exactly?
I think it was because of the explosion, people died. And after the explosion, there was a gunfire between the fighters.
So in total, how many bodies did you collect and how many people were injured?
15 people died and 20 others was injured. Some people was injured so badly, and I think some people might have died after they reached the hospital because they were so serious.
How did they sustain the injuries? Were these from explosion or gunshot wounds?
Both, but most of the people died because of the explosion.
How did the situation end in the ministry?
It was really very bad situation because most of the people, those who are in the ministry, it was so much disappointed, and even they cannot tell you. If you ask them their name, even they could not remember till hours.
So they were in a state of shock.
Yeah, they were in shock.
Dr. Abdulkader Abdirahman Aden, founder of the Mogadishu Ambulance Services. He was speaking with Haroon Maruf of VOA Somali Service. Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very good Wednesday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, James. In our Daybreak Africa Sports News, we begin with football. Nigeria overpowered hosts Seychelles 10-1 at the start of the Africa Beach Soccer Championships in Roche, Cayman on Tuesday. In the other Group A encounter, Ivory Coast and Egypt drew 2-2 in open play before Ivory Coast edged the Egyptians 3-1 in the ensuing post-match penalty shootout. In Group B, defending champions Senegal beat Morocco 7-3 as Madagascar outplayed Ghana 9-4. Today, Wednesday, Nigeria tackle Egypt as Seychelles challenge Ivory Coast, while Morocco play Ghana and Madagascar face Senegal. The finalists at this contest qualify for the FIFA Beach Soccer World Cup in Portugal and later this year. Turning to athletics, Athletics Kenya has suspended for 6 months the services of two prominent athletes agents, Rosa Associati and Volare Sports. Athletics Kenya president Isaiah Kiplagat told the Nairobi media on Tuesday that this is to enable them investigate any potential role the managers of these two entities may have had in failed doping tests that have ravaged Kenya's athletics image in recent months. Rosa Associati manages Rita Jepto, who is serving a 2-year ban for failing a dope test. The company also manages Kenya's world women's 800-meter champion Eunice Sum and world men's 1500-meter champion Asbel Kiprop, among other prominent Kenyan athletes, while Volare Sports manages current world marathon record holder Dennis Kimeto, two-time New York City marathon champion Geoffrey Mutai, and former world marathon record holder Wilson Kipsang, among others. Kipsang is an outspoken critic of Athletics Kenya president Isaiah Kiplagat. On a more cheerful note, 16-year-old newfound Kyle Appel won the South Africa Youth 200 meters in 20.76 seconds. Now Appel plans to compete against the country's top senior sprinters this coming weekend.
Going to senior East as well. That's where the big boys are. So I'm just going to go there also and give my best. My aim is this year for African Games. I would like to win it. And after that, if I can, will, I'll do my best and go to Worlds and hopefully grab a medal right there.
That was Kyle Appel, the South Africa Youth 200-meter champion, speaking in Mangaung, Free State Province, South Africa. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Omer in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Somali militant group Al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for Tuesday's bombing and assault of a government complex in the capital, Mogadishu. In Guinea, at least one person was killed and several others wounded in the capital, Conakry, as police battled to control violent demonstrations against the government of President Alpha Condé. That's it for this Wednesday, April 15th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Mark Oman, along with our engineer Zara Abuzeh, I'm James Butt in Washington, hoping that all of you in Africa will have a very good day.
Next time on Straight Talk Africa, combating terrorism across the continent. From the Al-Shabaab militant massacre of nearly 100 university students in Kenya to the kidnapping of 600 schoolgirls by Boko Haram. Is Africa's war on terrorism winnable? That's next time, right here on VOA Africa.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here. Only the best on VOA Africa.